Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hey, what's up, folks?
Brian Brushwood.
Hey, man, I'm having complicated feelings.
And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Oh, I have very simple feelings about your complicated feelings.
They're boring.
My
complicated feelings are, I like the fact that Google has figured out everything I'm interested in, but it's weird when you just recognize that, oh, this is all because you figured me out, isn't it? Like, Google News figured out Elon Musk says something interesting about Mars, then, yeah, let me just serve that up for you. And then, but then separately over on YouTube, they hit me up with the in a nutshell, the Kurzgott, I can never say it.
Kurzgott.
About how wildly irresponsible, difficult, challenging, insane, gruesome, and horrific the prospect of colonizing Mars is, and yet why we should do it anyway. And so I definitely spent like all day just reading up on Mars stuff.
You know, it's a very good point, because I get that feed where sometimes there's some cool stuff. And my problem with YouTube recommendations is like, how about this Red Letter Media video? I've seen it. You know, how about, I've watched that too, and I'm getting tired of telling you, stop pushing these things, because I've watched this entire inventory of stuff. My fear is this. Every day begins to feel like Groundhog Day.
Yeah. Well, and so I think you're onto something there, because it's not just the offense of being told what to watch. It's the offense of being told to watch something that you've already seen before. And the worst part of the whole experience is when you hit play anyway and you're like, you know what? I'm really glad you told me to watch this again. I had forgotten a lot of this. And then you just realize that we're just dumb meat puppets that are being, I don't know, you managed.
Even that, and also sort of like my algorithm's probably not changed in 4 or 5 years. And that's what kind of concerns me, is the idea that maybe it'll be the new, here's the new thing he said and a thing. And it's like, man, like, am I growing as a person? If my world is shaped by algorithms, and the algorithms are going to, they're tuned not for, and they're, quick example. If you go to a really good zoo, like Animal Kingdom, Disney's Animal Kingdom, which is an amazing zoo, one of the things the zookeepers do is they move around the gorilla's food every single day, right? So yeah, every day the gorilla's
food. That's for the health of the animal, to keep life interesting so they don't commit gorilla suicide or whatever.
It's great. They're still stuck in a zoo, though. it's better than just throwing the bananas at the gorillas, which they don't like. Don't do that. It's better than that, but it's in a step up. There's enough variety, but it's still contained. But, you know, in the wild, like, you see, like, exhibits where they have, like, dolphins in contained environments and stuff. Like, these things, they roam hundreds of miles, and maybe they're okay with it, but and my thing is that the algorithm cage, the idea that, and it's not anybody's fault. Okay, but
I've got a really weird leap that I want to make, and if it doesn't land, that's fine. But have you guys seen this upcoming documentary on the Filipino prison where they do all the crazy YouTube dance videos? Like,
oh,
this is an upcoming Netflix original, Happy Jail.
Take just a moment to take a look at this. You'll recognize these guys.
Yeah, I know this prison.
Yes.
Brian's like, you'll recognize these guys. A lot of Night Attack fans there.
But this is where they filmed that iconic Thriller video, where they recreate like the whole music video of Thriller in this prison courtyard.
What I really hope they explore is let's take questions of corruption and you know, societal differences aside. We have a collection of people that all are in a timeout, and you might as well do something like you were saying. It might as well be a good algorithm, a good experience in the zoo while you're in timeout, right? I mean,
And it's also therapeutic, right? Creative exercises, helping to work on rehabilitating.
Also, inmates. Somebody could say a megalomaniacal warden treats human beings as puppets to dance for his own amusement. Like, it's a complicated enough idea that I would love to... I hope they do a really good job with this documentary.
Yeah, well, it seems like a lot of pride.
That brings up whole other, like... You know, like
then you get the complicated question of during rehabilitation, should people experience any form of joy? Like are you undercutting the entire rehabilitation experience by giving anybody anything to be proud of?
Well, is it rehabilitation with the first question? And I mean, I don't have a problem. I mean, I don't think we should treat people like animals. Let me make that very, very clear. My question is like, when. Who are these? What are these people going to jail for here? Because, you know, I know in some countries it's like,
disagreeing.
The criminal population there might be different. I don't know. And I there's also the idea of it. The problem is that if you've never been to jail and close members of your family have never been to jail, jail is this very, very scary thing that keeps you from doing things that might put you into jail. If your family member has been in jail, you've grown up with this as a reality. Jail is not the same deterrent.
Sure.
You know, and that's the that's a whole other question.
But. Happy Jail is the name of the. Do we know when it comes out?
Yeah, it's August 14th.
Oh,
yeah. Tomorrow.
Hey, wow.
Tomorrow.
Hey, happy Jails Day.
it's a docuseries.
Happy Jails Eve.
Oh, in my family, Jail's Eve is when we got to watch just a little bit of Happy Jail, which I feel like we just did.
One segment.
But back to the whole the algorithm prison sort of mentality, the idea that, you know, we keep getting reinforced. You know, we talk about the echo chamber, but then our own little personal echo chambers. I feel like this every day that like, man, yesterday was a lot like the day before. And this was a lot like, I mean, one of the reasons I went out and did my Shark Week thing was because like, man, like this year was a lot like last year, and that scares me. So maybe I went a little bit overboard on, you know, my solution that.
But I definitely resonate with that because the last 2 or 3 years have been really delightful because we hit a position, and maybe we're getting into after things talk here, but we entered a place where I could be much more present at home. And being present at home means taking kids to various things at various days. And I went a good 20 years without really having a routine of any variety. And all of a sudden I realized, like, ooh, I'm kind of in a routine. Don't I hate routines? And then I'm like, yeah, I do, but I love my kids. And here I am doing a routine, and well, it's Monday. That means I got to take the one kid to the one thing, and so on. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you think that the count? I mean, is it going to be algorithms that will get us out of that? Because I look at Twitter, right, and everyone doesn't like when Twitter takes them off of the latest tweets version, and it shows them, oh, your friends favored this, oh, your friends follow these people, but. That's at least the algorithm trying to expose you to stuff that you didn't explicitly sign up for, but people don't want that, or you know,
or they say they
well,
don't.
They
want
say
that.
They don't want.
Yeah. The algorithm is still serving you things from a restaurant. Maybe what you don't want to go to do is go to the restaurant. Is just go make your own food and have a picnic. I mean,
as an alternative to logging off, or you know, using a different service.
Yeah, or even that. Google's going to push things that bring you back into Google experiences. You know, you're not going to get pushed over to the Netflix thing or some game that's only on the iPhone App Store. That even within that world of staying logged in, it's not a fault. I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying the things I try to be mindful of. It's like, you know, you're the same things are feeding, and it's bringing me more of the same, which maybe it's not bad, but I try to be aware of that.
Well, and at the end of the day, all algorithmic decisions are based on you staying on the platform, right? Or maximizing your time, maximizing your clicks, maximizing your interaction. They view success as this created more of that and failure as this created less of that. Whether or not it means that we are better or more successful or more robust or growing, right? So it's like, even if they are feeding us, so to your point, Bryce, it's like, okay, yeah, well, now they are feeding you things, and indeed, we're reacting. We don't like it. We don't like it as much as we like the other thing. And maybe that is a sign of like, okay, well, maybe they should be doing more of that. Maybe this is giving us things that you challenge us and then make us give us new situations where we're like, okay, well, let's fill in the negative data of what we don't like. Maybe that helps us fill in. Okay, well, then maybe there's another thing that you do like that is the opposite of that.
Do we need like we'll call a service? We'll call it homework.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, Bryce, your homework is you got to go outside today and listen to bird calls for half an hour. Mm-hmm. You know,
Google vegetables.
Like, yeah, something like exactly like, hey, let's give this randomization kind of thing of like this. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's liberal arts education, you know, in an RSS feed.
Yeah,
exactly.
That would be interesting. Like a daily objective. So it's the further gamification of life, well, though.
I think we've talked about this before. That's what Pokemon Go is doing for Niantic, right? Niantic sure. sells all of that data. They figure out, for whatever reason, whether it's an intelligence agency, somebody somewhere really needs up-to-the-minute photographs of this area. Guess where a new Pokemon gym just showed up? And children go and take photos of that area.
I wasn't trying to get to the go outside thing. I mean, you could just be inside. You're, you know, like, find five ways to cook an egg. I'm just saying, like, the idea of, like,
The computer saying,
I don't think the answer to everything is log off. Yeah. I think maybe we'll log in more.
I'm not even saying that. In fact, I want to go the opposite direction. Imagine, maybe this is better served as a science fiction novel that I'll talk about never getting around to writing. But imagine there's a company that offers Blue Pill Bliss, by which they say, hey, what say you opt out of regular society. You already have the red pill in that you're getting the raw feed of everything that is happening. And it turns out there's a lot of ugly things happening in the world. We all want to believe that we could be that one unique, beautiful snowflake Beyonce who makes it in life. Join the Blue Pill Society here at Microsoft 2.0. You don't have to worry about money anymore. We take care of money. U.S. dollars, sign all that over to us. We'll give you something that very quickly you'll care about more than real U.S. money. You won't care about status because we're going to feed your diet. You will no longer read the news as it exists in the outside world. You'll only read the news that we provide to you. But don't worry, everything is very carefully curated so that you constantly have a low-grade perception that you are doing better, getting ahead at life, that your family's being taken care of. You don't have to worry about healthcare because we genuinely do take care of your physical body because that is valuable biotechnology to us. So in other words, you will guaranteed live anywhere between 40 and 80 more years of your life, and you will consistently, in our audits, report increased satisfaction with the style of your life, the trajectory that you're working on, the value of what you do. All we ask is that we be the ones to control your information diet and handle everything for you.
And be our batteries.
Are you the bad guy in Sorry to Bother You?
Are you L. Ron Hubbard?
I mean, but here's my question. Is 10 years ago, everything I just said would sound insane, and everybody would agree that nobody would take that pill. But in a world where we're increasingly being ugly to each other on various social media platforms, I wonder, and we're increasingly worried about whether or not we'll be taken care of by the next generation, I wonder if how many people would go for that nowadays.
Well, I would say there's tons of precedent on that. You described in many ways what a cult does. I mentioned Scientology because they're like, don't need to pay attention to the world out there. We'll tell you what's important. Tune in here. Many versions, you go, I'll hop on a Carnival cruise line. You know, it's like, don't worry about cash. Just bring your band or whatever it's paid and do that. And so we have forms of escapism as far as like the by and large version of it or the techno version of it. Maybe, you know, I mean, what's a retirement home going to be like in 20 years where it's going to be like, you know, for, you know, 30 years from now, like we're going to have the best VR hookups and everything and stuff. So I think, yeah, people have been willing to buy into versions that religion offers a version of that. They're like, here's the book that's really important. Mm-hmm. you know, here's the thing that this, and so sure. Sure.
I mean, I guess what I'm thinking of is the consent side of thing, but I guess you're right when you bring up cults, they've always had consent, but the idea of saying like, hey, you're going to solve problems. Okay. You want to live in red pill reality? We're going to send you to 35 different sales conferences. We're going to make you pitch for 3 days at a time. Or what if you go to blue pill reality where you're still doing the same thing, only you perceive yourself as you're solving a quest for this pirate's gold, and you will perceive, and you'll never hear about who's president, and you're going to be playing World of Warcraft all the time, and everybody's going to be clapping for you because you know what? Digital claps are very cheap for us to provide for you, so that you're going to get that same serotonin rush. You're going to be filled with joy as everybody claps when you discover the gold.
I had a very similar thought to that, Brian, on the Strip. On Saturday night, while I was walking with David Rowan, and we were being accosted by religious protesters, because I wondered, what is that experience to them? Because I have no doubt that it is so much different than where I think it is. I think it is somebody that is being aggressive and yelling at people that are trying to have a good time. But for them, they are actively trying to save the world, you know, for however they got there. That is what they are trying to do. They are doing their best to do it.
And on top of that, they're engaging in that classic Las Vegas pastime of gambling. Like, they're fishing. To them, they're like, oh my God, I got somebody's interest. I got them on the hook. I think I might be able to convince them. And then it's like, oh my God, I saved a soul. Look at the size of the soul. Take a selfie of me with the giant soul that I just saved.
Sounds I got like stopped.
Cannibals.
3 days ago, walking out of Jamba Juice in North Hollywood by an older guy handing out brochures like, oh, check out this new website. I'm like, well, that doesn't sound ominous. You know, I'm like, well, what is it for? And he goes, Scientology. I'm like, oh, well, pro or con? He's like, well, pro, like, well, what, like, you know, you should experience for yourself and find out. And I'm like, and I wasn't not trying to argue with the guy, because there's a point. I'm like, well, I mean, I have friends that were former Scientologists, and they've told me quite a lot, you know, including people who were Sea Org members, and it was a negative experience. And I had a friend who dated like his mom dated like one of the second highest people in there. I said, you know, dated like from everybody I know from the inside are telling me to stay clear. And he's like, well, I can't tell with their experience and stuff. I'm like, well, I just did. Is it if I'm not talking, I said, you know, I've read, and like, well, maybe you should read the book or something. I'm like, oh, I read it. And it was just this sort of thing. And he's like, well, I'm new at this. I've only been at it for 50 years. And I wanted to be like, I don't want to be mean, but I'm like, you've been in this organization for 50 years. And the best use for you and your skills is to put you on a street corner in North Hollywood, handing brochures out to people coming out of Jamba Juice.
Hold on.
Just maybe.
Now, oh, okay. Okay. So in my science fiction novel, maybe it begins on the one day a year because they want to maintain consent and they want everybody on the same page and nobody should be here who doesn't want to be here. So one day a year, you are told...
A purge, Brian?
One day a year, you are given the complete story of what the rest of the world looks like. So it begins with you walking into your audit, let's say, and then you take a pill that basically you're now entering a hypnotic, amnesiatic phase where it's like, much like Ambien or whatever, like you won't remember this. You're already in a blackout. You're fully in your faculties, but you know that everything happening now, you will not remember. And then you get to, if you want to, you can see the way the world is and you can opt out, but then, or you can decide to, you know, re-up for just one more year of blue pill life.
Brian, I mean, that's that part of that. That's like what the Amish do. Like, your kids reach a certain age. They're like, go see that. There you go.
Rumspringa.
See what an awful world it is. Then come back to, you know, Amish land.
So that seems moral, I think, right?
In this story, is this lifestyle, are you for it? Or are you getting it? Like, what?
Oh, I don't know. That's part of what's fascinating.
Have you figured this out?
I was wondering,
like, what the moral kind of this of this story.
All right, no, hold on. Actually, that's late stage stuff. I'll have to figure out that part later on. But now, all of a sudden, now you got me convinced. the first third of this book, the whole first act, mm-hmm. should completely, unironically, be a fantasy novel. Like, it's just a really good fantasy novel. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, there's this crazy chapter where he woke up on the 30th day and he wasn't at the camp. Instead, he was in a weird tube and mm-hmm. had an appointment with a so-and-so and did whatever. And he decided, so like he had been in I guess that would be the beginning on the Campbell arc. That would be the beginning where he crosses the threshold and tries to understand this crazy world, which turns out to be reality that he's been doing the whole time.
Let's just call him what his name is.
Neo.
Neo.
No, Brian.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Brian Neo.
Do I want to go here or not? You
know? I mean, I guess I am just straight up describing the Matrix, but I think there's
but I think that shows how relevant that story is.
Yeah, right?
I think you're not far away from the relevancy of this movie that you adore.
I guess you might be talking about the real Matrix prequel. Like how did all the humans get enslaved?
Oh,
batteries, guys, batteries.
All right, okay. I'm not gonna take the bait on that one. We all know that was a garbage explanation. But I do like the idea that maybe like it's assumed that humanity was enslaved in the Matrix. But I do like the idea that we were seduced and voluntarily gave ourselves over to the Matrix. I think that's the interesting idea that I want to play with.
Play virtual reality.
It's great. It's like you're playing virtual reality.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's on Vive, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Yeah, that's a real product.
No, it's a real thing. It's a real thing. In fact, it's a little bit close to
like accounting.
Justin Roiland's accounting. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's different. I thought virtual was way deeper for me and way more. There's a real storyline there about what's going on.
That's cool.
Yeah. Well, accounting started off as a free thing. So that's totally understandable.
Yeah, no, I'm not bagging on accounting, but yeah, virtual reality is this. The premise is it's a game where in the future, AIs have taken over, and the only jobs left for humans are to basically entertain them.
Oh, to entertain the AIs.
Mm. Yeah, like you know, you have an AI that likes to pretend he's a loaf of butter. Like he thinks he's a big thing of butter. So you take bread and you rub it all over him, and he's like, "Oh, so good." And then all these toasters around you start popping more toast, and now you've got to keep, you know, doing this. But it's not about that. But it's part of these crazy.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
And then you get into deeper levels, and then you find out, like, you take off your VR glasses, and you're in another level, and another level, and you try to find out the story of what's really going on. I really was one of my favorite profound kind of storytelling experiences in VR. So
that's clever. So.
Forgive me. I don't want to take us down too many rabbit holes, but what was it? A year ago that you showed us some stuff you were working on that on an iPhone was able to identify individual targets and say, you know, human, car, this thing going that way.
The YOLO algorithm, the really fast one, yeah.
And I'm horrified to even say this out loud, and we don't have to go too deep on this discussion if it's uncomfortable given recent news, but I had the thought, why has somebody terrible not built a sentry that just headshot?
I mean, I think that's Northrop Grumman.
But military, that makes the problems you have to deal with are making sure it's the enemy and all this other stuff. But if you're an indiscriminate psycho who just wants the highest body count or whatever, mm-hmm. I guess I'm horrified to even say this out loud. Like, why has that not already happened?
There are scopes that will calculate the
step between somebody doing it. But no, somebody made one as in our project. They put a gun on a drone and showed how you could use image targeting and stuff. And it's frightening, you know, you see this idea that you can do this, but to your point, like, yeah, but remember we've had a very old version of that, which is the not as discriminatory as bombing, you know, the Unabomber did a version of that tech of, I get a human to deliver this thing that'll kill you to you. And
yeah, so, I guess it's Brian, a rarity of expertise. In the Venn diagram is you have a rarity of expertise, you have the rarity of that sociopathy, and you have the rarity of the money to fund all of that. And then you have the rarity of like those who have those three are already employed by Northrop Grumman.
Yeah, I mean it's becoming easier. Like it would not be a terribly complicated thing, but as you point out, like, you know, the percentage of people that want to do these horrific acts is extremely minute. You know, by the news magnification,
astonishingly minute. Like very few people I find are really able to grasp just how rare it is that somebody wants to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's one factor. But you know, there was a neat book in the 90s, A Cult at the End of the World, about the Amshri Ru cult, which was this Japanese cult, the ones that gassed the Tokyo subway station, and they were trying to make sarin gas. And they got pretty far because a lot of the cult members were engineers. And so they had a whole facility to build, like to try to build gas and do this. They're a little bit shocking, a little bit not quite knowing what the heck they wanted to do. But they had this charismatic cult leader who, you know, convinced them into doing this sort of thing. And they had a serious weapons grade, you know, development program that, you know, they got far. But still what they were trying to do was technically hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a pretty dark thought, but a very light thought is coming on over to patreon.com/weirdthings where you can support this show. You know, every once in a while, there's some travel snafus. Brian and I were on a plane when this show normally records, but we make sure we come right back the next day to get you a fresh episode of Weird Things only 24 hours late. That's the kind of dedication and commitment we have to you, the patrons of this show at patreon.com/weirdthings.
So, gentlemen, I have some cool news, and we talked about this a while ago on our show because we tend to be SpaceX-centric, says the guy wearing the SpaceX hat. But another company we've talked about is Rocket Lab, and Rocket Lab has been working on smaller rockets, basically to focus more on like smaller satellites, CubeSats, etc. And part of their kind of cool innovation is they use an engine called the Rutherford, which uses batteries to power a turbine that spins and pumps the fuel through the rocket engine, because they figured this was actually cheaper and for a smaller engine worked out really well. Their goal was, hey, we're going to build these rockets. We're going to make them super cheap. So you just launch them, launch whatever you want to space, and then move right along. They said, you know, reusability is not a thing. We're not really trying to pursue that. But last week, the head of Rocket Lab said, you know what? Maybe not so much as a cost-saving measure, but more as a, you know, maybe we don't want to have to keep churning out rockets and keep building factories. Let's explore reusability. So that's their plan now, is they want to start reusing the first stages of their rockets. And they're using, you know, something we've seen before, which is basically the first stage would come back, but it wouldn't use propulsive, you know, like SpaceX rockets. They go back and they still have enough fuel to sort of enter and then slow themselves down. This, they're talking about building a rocket that's going to be a bit more heat resistant and basically just use aerodynamic drag to slow down, and then use a balut, which is a balloon / parachute to slow it down, then a parachute, and then pick them up midair with a helicopter.
I mean, this sounds crazy, but also awesome.
This was the initial plan for the ULA rocket, right?
The ULA was going to use for the engines, which recover the engines. And using helicopters to retrieve stuff coming in from space is not a new thing. That's actually been done by, you know, since like the 60s. So like the original spy satellites, like Keyhole and stuff, they would have payloads that would pop out and then they would re-enter the Earth's atmosphere, and an airplane would come swoop up and pick up the line from the parachute and pick that up. We just had one of our Martian material retrieval missions. That's the way that's worked, is we've used we've done retrieval missions, you know, plans on the books, things that we're working on basically using helicopters. So we've done that. They're doing a pretty big object, so it's kind of a cool step, though.
I mean, I understand everything about this announcement except for the addition of the phrase "not as a cost-saving measure." Like, if not to save money, then why?
Well, not to lower the cost along,
or not to act like this is, you know, going to make us one of the cheapest options for XYZ or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the way they phrase it was meaning more from the point of view of
it'll be quicker to turn them around.
We don't have to keep building rockets. We can just keep reusing these. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, because when SpaceX did it, they lowered the cost by 20 to 30%. I don't think Rocket Lab, I think, is trying to avoid the expectation that this will make the rocket launches cheaper.
Got it. They're saying this is not the secret sauce that's going to make us the cheapest way to do X, Y, or Z. So set those expectations correctly. But in the meantime, they're so right, because a system that artificially intelligently manages rocket thrust is going to be more expensive than, you know, a parachute and a pilot for 2 hours of expertise.
You know, but the thing is, it does get, you know, when you start looking at what it costs to send the recovery ship out there, helicopter time, those things, they do add up. And that's where, you know, SpaceX, because their ships are exponentially bigger, but you talk about the number of crew involved, you know, they've said they've done the math and they're looking to do it. So we'll see. And I don't think we talked about it, but, you know, SpaceX, you know, we saw they were able to, did we talk about catching the fairing?
Oh, I think we did mention the fact that they finally pulled it off on formerly Mr. Steven. I still don't know why they changed the name.
Miss Tree.
Ms.
And
Tree.
And then it's going to be Miss Chiff.
Yeah.
Did we watch the video of that on here?
I think we did. Yes.
Okay.
Because I don't know I would have seen it.
In the net, right?
And yeah.
You can see it
in
the corner.
Yeah, this is the latest one they just caught. I think they've done they did it a second time last week. If this is the new, yeah, look at that.
It's low tech, but it is also, I mean, that ain't nothing considering it came from, you know, outside the planet. That's fairly precise.
Wow. Yeah. Kind of incredible. So, we're just watching this, you know, and you think about the scale gets lost. You know, we've been in there and we've seen, you know, at SpaceX, the size of those fairings, and, you know, you could fit a school bus in there.
They're massive. Mm-hmm.
And it lands very gently, right? That's another difference, is it doesn't kind of have to, propel itself off of the ship it lands very, very softly on the net.
Yeah, and whereas the reusable first stages, I mean, they come to Earth pretty quickly and have to do a big old burst to stop from being a bullet headed towards planet Earth.
Yeah.
I want to do one more quick topic, just because this came up in one of my feeds, and it was a very interesting article about self-created hallucinations without the use of drugs. And I'm like, man, we should get the guys who this article's referencing on the show, or at least one of them.
Uh-oh.
Brian.
This is you, Brian.
Wait,
what? It was a Scamp Nation reference. They are reading this thing on Science Alert, and they're talking about, you know, here's a thing about self-created hallucinations.
Oh, that's amazing. This is wonderful. I didn't know that this happened. Road. Yeah.
They credit it to Scamp Nation because it originally came out on the Scam School channel back then.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So we, this is the Ganzfeld effect, and it's basically, the experiment is shockingly simple. All you have to do is take a piece of white paper, cut it so that it looks like a weird pair of Oakleys or something that you put over your head and put white noise into your ears. And it is astonishing how fast the human body, in the absence of any significant input or in the presence of pure noise, just gets to work manufacturing, like, well, there's got to be something out there. So what are we seeing, boys? And the whole experience was, 20 minutes long? Is that right, Bryce?
I think under 20 minutes. I think you guys got up right before the timer, but yeah.
Yeah, and there was this moment that it looked to my eyes like I was standing in what now I would think of as like the Westworld set, basically. And you see faces. It's really remarkable. It's a highly...
You heard stuff too, right? Wasn't that part of it, as you tried to make sense out of some of the white noise?
Yeah, so you're hearing the white noise. And again, your brain is hard at work saying like, well, that's got to be something. So what is it? And I heard everything from children laughing to... somebody moaning, trying to say something. It truly was a great experience.
Wow. Thank you, Science.
The more I've been diving into like artificial intelligence and deep learning and stuff, and you watch these algorithms as they try to process images and sounds and stuff, it seems it's so much like what you described that. It's like, you know, that when you're half asleep, half awake, and your brain starts telling you this little kind of semi-narrative, and you're like, oh, it's because this led to this. It's kind of spooky and weird.
And if you want to go really far down that rabbit hole, fMRI studies seem to indicate that what we perceive as the us in charge of our bodies isn't really so much an us, so much as an after-the-fact narrative always lagging 100 milliseconds behind these limbic systems making decisions, and then us justifying after the fact, you know, the decisions that we make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. We're all meat puppets.
I'm okay with that. That's fine.
No puppets.
Be manipulated.
Yeah. So anyway, check that out if you want. It's kind of fun. Neat to see that pop up on Science Alert. And they just kept saying the Scam Nation guys. The guys at Scam Nation.
I mean, they're not wrong.
It was the channel it came out on at the time.
Well, and probably the one that they started with.
A name or two would have been cool.
Also, it was very abundantly clear when we went to DEF CON, like, Modern Rogue only had its own channel for less than 3 years now. And mm-hmm. I think Jason was in the first like 3 months of Scam School. So it's like, it's not wrong to sort of by the numbers credit us as more the Scam Nation guys than the Modern Rogue guys, weirdly enough.
Oh, sure, sure. My issue wasn't the Scam Nation thing. It's like maybe mention an actual name, hey, like a person.
That's fine. You say the Mythbusters, we all know who you're talking about.
The Legend Busters.
Tori. it's new guys now.
Yeah, they got a new crew, right? Are they still doing that, the new Mythbusters?
Yeah, I think they're still doing that. And then Adam has a new show called Savage Builds. So,
yeah, smart move, putting his name in the title. Welcome to Brushwood Brands.
You guys want to? I know we're pressed for time, so let's just jump into picks.
I don't know that I have a. You know what? I got four episodes. I'm rewatching The Boys. I can't believe it.
Nice.
I found myself actively looking for think pieces and reviews. I watched Red Letter Media. Like, I got giddy when they were just going to talk about The Boys, and some part of the back of my brain was like, "So I guess you love The Boys. What say you watch it again?" And I was like, well, I'm not the type to rewatch a show and then instant flash forward to four episodes in. I'm rewatching it. It's great. It's really, really good. It's even better the second time around.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I have a new thing to tell everybody. I'm watching The Boys. I'm watching The Boys, baby. I don't know why no one's talking about it. It's a show on Amazon Prime. These superheroes, man. What the hell's happening with them? They're going crazy. I'll echo something that I think Bryce said initially. I was kind of really cold on the trailer. Mm-hmm. I thought that the trailer just made it seem like super like number two edgy number four letter U. And I was like, okay, I get it. Like a more sophomoric kind of Watchmen. But even compared to Preacher, which is another, what's his butt show?
Same guy.
Yeah.
Same writer, and also Garth produced by Seth Rogen, both of them.
Eric Kripke?
Yeah. Maybe. But, like, it's a very different vibe. Like Preacher does have a lot more of that gonzo element, and certainly there are moments of that in The Boys. But the most fascinating element to me is the world building of the strata of a world where superheroes are both real in terms of, yes, they're real, like you would understand them to be figuratively real, but also literally real. They exist in the same spot in culture as they do here as actors and IP. And so I love that.
And
I love
athletes.
It. Good.
Everybody makes human decisions in the show, which is one of the things I really liked. Was at no point did I feel I saw the hand of the writer coming in and doing something. People did stupid things, but people do things, stupid things rarely. But I did feel like the writers were doing, let's just get from point A to point B and we'll just do this. You know, I felt like the show was smart.
Yeah. A very strong pace too. Like only 8 episodes, which is just the right amount of time. Marvel. I have a pick of something I rewatched over the weekend. I think I talked about this I must have been on the after talk for Cord Killers yesterday, but I went back and rewatched the first season that they put out of Homecoming, another Amazon Prime original. Mm. Man, this show holds up. I know
they're dead.
Not quite.
I've never seen a single. I have no idea.
No, just... yeah. We talked a little bit about it when it came out last year, and it's kind of got this mystery sort of suspense sort of vibe. And once you know it, you know it. But watching it again, you really see all of the clues and all of the hints and all of the teases about like what's going on, what we're actually like, even loose threads or unexplained bits that are supposed to make you ask questions. If I had missed them, seeing it again made me go, oh yeah, you know what, that's right, that's something.
So it's good. Maybe it looks so boring to me. I haven't started it because it looks boring.
It's very good, and it's very short because they're only half hour
That's
episodes.
The secret. So here's the funny part is if it was an hour long episode, I would agree. I wouldn't have ever been able to finish it. Mm-hmm. But I can't name another drama that is only in 23, 24 minute chunks.
Certainly not on streaming.
Well, and certainly not with the quality of visual direction from Sam Esmail.
And the Mr. Robot cinematographer too. I mean, like full staff. Yeah.
Yeah. It just flies by. It's one of those shows that you spend the majority of it being like, yeah, I don't know. I guess I'll watch another. Why not? Let's go. And then you get to the end and you're like, oh, that was great. And it's only at the end that you realize how great it was because they kept it so light and short for so long.
Yeah. And they're setting up for a second season, probably going to come out in 2020, but that Julia Roberts won't be back, but Janelle Monáe will be, or she will be joining the cast. And that will be very cool because she's a great actress. Cool. Homecoming on Amazon Prime Video.
Did I mention Prospect before?
I don't think you have.
What a fun science fiction movie, Prospect. Prospect stars Pedro Pascal, directed by
the guy from Narcos?
Narcos, the soon-to-be-coming Mandalorian.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This is a movie from 2018. I totally missed this.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this.
It's a story of a father and a daughter who are space prospectors, kind of down on their luck. They go down to a planet, and it's a small story, meaning it's just a few characters set on this planet. It looks a lot like Earth, but you got to wear spacesuits because the atmosphere, and it's a Western, basically. It's like a frontier Western. I enjoyed it. The production design, I thought, was great. Again, it's an indie sci-fi movie, which today means you'll have great computer generated effects, you know, but it's not a big movie, but for story and everything else, I thoroughly enjoyed Prospect. I'd been meaning to watch it. I thought it was a delight. There's a lot of genre. There's a lot of sci-fi indie stuff that uses space stuff that tends to be just two people in a room talking, and it gets drawn out and kind of boring because you realize they just want to call it sci-fi, but it's just mumble, you know,
oh, yeah,
some sort of mumble movie, whatever, mumble porn.
Mumble this porn. That's where people ASMR. Keep wanting to say like how good they are at sex, but you're like, oh, you're really doing it for it. You're very good at it. It's very big.
This was I thought this was good. You know, again, you got the young girl plays it. Pedro Pascal's great. All the cast is really good.
Yeah.
Small set. I still can't get into Lost in Space, you know, which is the big super budget big thing, because it just
was
people
like,
do.
All right. It, like, well, and like, Brian, you had good stuff to say about Lost in Space.
I liked it, but if I loved it, I probably would have finished it.
Oh, you didn't even finish that first season?
Yes.
My kids. And I blame my family. They all betrayed me, and they all watched the rest of it without me, and I intended to get around and getting around.
Well, that's just the sometimes like, I'm into it, but I'm not, don't feel compelled. And that's sometimes like, there's a lot of shows that are 10 episodes. I got 6 or 7 in, and I'm like, I haven't had the ones that pulled me in. I've had, it's good. But like Lost in Space, one of those things was like that. And it wasn't getting better for me. But again, Prospect's different. It's a feature, just a feature length movie. But it's indie. Understand you're watching, you know, small budget film. But I it was just fun. I'm not telling, oh, it's going to blow your mind.
How does it stack up next to, say, Monster or the Europa Report?
Considering... I couldn't friggin' finish Europa Report because I got bored to death.
Yep.
And Monsters is worth watching, not to be confused with the old syndicated horror show.
Monsters is interesting from the point of view of just looking. It's kind of like a sky captain kind of movie. Like, look at what a small group of people made.
Yeah.
You know, Monsters, one guy, you know.
Yeah, and plus also, like, that being a pedigree, that's the guy that went on to do, what was the movie with the trees that looked like humans?
The Lord of the Rings with the end.
Yes, that's exactly what we're thinking of.
Are we talking about Gareth Edwards?
Yeah.
Who
yeah.
did Rogue yeah. One?
No. Godzilla? Did he not do, not Supernatural, what was it called? Doggone it. It was the day and date release that came out in theaters and on Netflix internationally at the same time. I guess it's probably not that movie.
Yeah, somebody yeah Gareth, right he went on to do Godzilla. He looks like a giant tree.
Yeah.
No, that's not.
He's what like kind of green, right? Like trees.
It's a bunch of women who there's like a time distortion thing.
Annihilation.
Remember that's that the one I'm thinking.
Annihilation.
Of. Thinking yeah. of Annihilation. So he did not do that. I'm assuming.
No, that was one of my favorite directors, and I can Alex Annihilation. Garland. I just was not.
Did Annihilation?
Okay,
Alex Garland.
Yeah, Alex Garland, who I think was an amazing writer, really good director. That movie was just. I could get into the book.
Annihilation of Monsters. Occupy very similar niches in my mind, yeah. and I don't think I'm crazy to feel that
remember,
way.
No, I just, Godzilla's I'm, going back into the ocean, and the news says King of the Trees.
on the note of monsters, for me is like Godzilla. Watching Rebel Without like watching El Mariachi. You know,
yes.
No, oh, this is now really cool because I get like this one guy did all his VFX stuff.
Right.
And that's cool.
Yeah,
Prospect
like. Yeah. Monsters, I remember watching half of it with Brian, and I'm like, this is an amazing special effects reel.
Yes.
What an exciting idea that he got real actors to just act out his special effects reel.
Yep. Prospect, no, there's a story there. It's a solid Western-type story. I enjoyed it. There's world building. There's a lot of, there's this world they live in is this, you know, we're exploring outer parts of, you know, distant worlds and stuff, and you know, but we're in this tiny, if you like The Expanse, you know, Prospect feels like something could kind of fit within some part of that if The Expanse was, you know.
So when, do they give more than lip service to, you know, physics?
Oh, yeah. No, they almost all of it takes place on the planet. They go down to this prospecting planet. So almost all of it takes place there. But their realities are very real realities about food, fuel, things like that. Again, it's a very simple story, but it is a very, you know, that felt like a real universe.
Yeah. Assuming I'm reading between the lines and in the idea that this is a frontier Western story that on some level it's a resource limitation reality where.
Yeah. I mean, it's just. Hmm.
I only have 75 units of Quantex left and these many emotional beats to resolve with my daughter before this monster eats us all.
Well, I mean, it's not, tree. I mean, I don't want
to. No. Just let me speculate wildly and project onto this.
Enjoy. I think you'll dig it if you don't.
Did you rent it or did you stream it somewhere?
You know, I think, you know, one of my picks I've been, you know, said before is if you have a library system that supports both. There are a couple different apps that like,
yeah, Lynda and there's we talked about it just in fact, we got an email last week on the Cord Killers program where somebody was reminding that not all libraries have a lot of money and that there are lower cost, alternatives like Hoopla and a bunch of other stuff.
It might've been Hoopla that was on there. Yeah. So I think I found it one of those. And what's interesting about Hoopla, like on the Apple TV, it won't show you what's on there. It'll show you what's in other things, so you have to go into the app. So I think I may have found it in Hoopla or one of the other services. So by all means, just a little note, many library systems, they subscribe to these services. You go online, register your library card, then you can download an app like I did for my Apple TV, which then allows me to watch these movies straight up on my Apple TV. And, you know, if you want to walk the righteous path and not be, you know.
Did I just see Hoopla has The Boys? If you have a library card, you can watch The Boys?
I can't tell if that's an audiobook version of The Boys.
Got it. Okay.
Oh, comic. It's probably the comic because they have comics too.
Yeah, they have comics on here too.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, audiobooks, all sorts. It's a great resource. You know, there's a lot of cool stuff out there that isn't pushed in front of us. So. Yeah. All right. It's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.